Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer. David Faber's back at the New York Stock Exchange. Futures looked to steady after yesterday's sell-off, the worst in 2 months, as Powell's message was confusing to some, certainly drew some criticism from the president. First day of August also brings reminders of seasonal weakness. Europe is mixed. Bank of England holds steady. 10-year holding that two handle, but ISM is on the way in an hour. Our roadmap begins with the phrase that spooked Wall Street, mid-cycle adjustment. Stocks are set to steady at the open.
Plus, Verizon's 5G focus. CEO Hans Vestberg telling me 50% of the U.S. will have access to that new technology by next year, but that doesn't come without challenges.
And Beyond Meat is tumbling again in the pre-market. The plant-based meat maker pricing a secondary at 6 times the IPO price and has some new competition on the way. Stocks are looking to open higher after their worst day in 2 months. Yesterday, the Fed cuts rates by a quarter point, but the chair dampens expectations for more easing. Despite the sell-off, the major indices still finished July in the green, their 6th positive month in 7, although we're headed into the historically weakest 2 months of the year, Jim.
Well, look, everyone's making much too much of this mid-cycle. We're going to forget what that means. Like 10 days, 5 days from now, we won't be thinking about that. We think about it today until the market goes up, and then we say, forget about it. Look, he was in a spot. He's in a spot because he has a president who can't fire him, but would fire him, right? And send him down the elevator. And he wants to make it so that it's not personal. So he comes up with something that's kind of split the difference mid-cycle because he can't say, look, I would have loved it if he had said, look, what's slow is what the president's done. But can you imagine the food fight? Jay Powell's not a food fighter. Jay Powell is a legitimate business person who gets stressed every day and goes to work. And he doesn't think of things like Sleepy Joe. And he doesn't talk about crying Chuck. And he doesn't know about what is the one with Hillary, the jail or whatever. He's like a legitimate businessman. And he can't get in a food fight with the president. So he takes this thing.
Well, you're echoing. Here's MKM today. He could have articulated that uncertainties continue around trade.
Right.
He chose not to do any of that, instead delivering a mixed and confusing message.
Well, but what is he going to do? Here's what we wanted. Hey, you know, I really screwed up. I should never raised in December. And by the way, we got a loco president, and he's at war with China, and good luck to him. But if he does $320 billion more, we're going to be sunk because the manufacturing economy is slowing. He can't do that. So it comes up with mid-cycle adjustment.
There's a way to diplomatically say we continue to monitor very closely.
Well, he's got to do
trade, and where there is certainly going to be a potential impact, as we've already seen, in terms of the willingness of businesses to invest if, in fact, the tensions continue to ratchet up.
Wow, David.
And just keep it out of mind.
If you've been working, are you an advisor of his? Is that where you've been the last couple
of
days?
I've never spoken to Mr. Powell in my life.
That is very good. That would have been
David
great.
David could run comms for just about anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Sleepless, he runs it. But I've got to tell you, that would have been much better. But I do think that, look, the guy doesn't want to be the story. Now, we've made him the story because we came up with mid-cycle and the futures went down at that point. Well, give me a break. If he does $320 billion next week, which is possible, Trump, we'll be saying, you know what, Powell saw it. He's a visionary. He came, he saw, he conquered. So, Vici, so let's just at least accept the fact that he's got a president that immediately trashed him. I mean, look, think about Jay Powell before he took the job. You know, he's a legitimate guy. Goes to work, comes home, you know, has a cup of coffee in the morning, comes back and have dinner. Now he's got some guy saying, like, you know, we're waiting for a name, right? What is Jay Powell's going to name? Do you name? Dumb as a post, Powell? Or is that too many syllables? Just post-Powell? I mean, come on, he's the president making fun of him. Like we were in third grade and our mom, we come home and our mom hit us with a hairbrush.
Gone on for, I don't know, almost a year now.
The name calling?
Just the general tone.
It wears you down.
Of disfavor from the chief executive of the
disfavor
country
is
who
just
does not have the power to fire
but
him.
It's, isn't
at
it,
least according to Powell.
It's disrespectful, it's rude.
But you think it,
and he picked him.
In his head? You do. You seem to think Trump's in Powell's head.
Trump's in everybody's head in this whole country. No one wants to be called a name.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
You want to be called a name? He's got a name now for someone on MSNBC that's so mean that I don't even want to say it. He's a name caller. I mean, Senator Warren's a senator, right? What does he call her?
We all know.
Well, I know. That's why I'm saying. Jay doesn't want to be that. Jay does not want to be the focus of the story, is what I'm saying. Well, he's very close to becoming the focus.
The chair certainly has some who are close to the Fed coming to his defense.
Right.
Listen to Bill Poole this morning on Worldwide Exchange.
Oh, jeez.
What I think is that it's a big mistake for the Federal Reserve to believe that the one rate cut would satisfy President Trump. Let's be very clear. President Trump knows very little about monetary policy. I doubt that he knows the difference between a reserve ratio and a liquidity ratio.
All right, so after Yellen, Greenspan, Dudley, everybody tries to give him some cover. Now they're trying to help him out with the relationship with the POTUS.
True. Now, it just wasn't mentioned in the interview this morning, but at one point someone said they know nothing with reference to Bill Powell. It was me when Bill wanted to tighten. 2007, 2008. Bill, I will say this about Bill Poole. He looks younger than ever.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. You're saying something nice. And you don't have anything
I don't
to say.
I'm not like our president. I say, you know what my mom says.
Just like your mother.
If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. Now, Trump's dad, I think, clearly said something else. But I listened to Bill, and Bill is a very nice man.
12 years ago, this coming weekend, I think Saturday is the day, is the anniversary of Jim's rant with Aaron Burnett. We just want to listen to it because it's always good to listen to. Take a listen.
He has no idea.
Cramer.
I have talked to the heads of almost every single one of these firms in the last 72 hours, and he has no idea what it's like out there. None. And Bill Poole has no idea what it's like out there. My people have been in this game for 25 years, and they are losing their jobs, and these firms are going to go out of business, and he's nuts. They're nuts. They know nothing.
Cramer.
I have not seen it like this since I went five bid for a half a million shares of Citigroup and I got hit in 1990. This is a different kind of market, and the Fed is asleep.
Now, you went there because you've been hearing things from your contacts that you didn't think the Fed was hearing. You wouldn't say that about the Fed today, or would you?
You know, people thought I liked Bear Stearns. I heard right before I came out there, Bear Stearns was telling me that they're in big trouble. I did not want to be a reason that Bear Stearns would close. You can say whatever you want about what I said about Bear. There's a real funny man that said, legendary TV funny man who said, you know, listen, I said, buy Bear. I said, your money's safe.
You didn't.
I said, your money's safe because it's insured. Because it's insured. I used to sell that insurance. But the issue is that David and I both knew that there are a lot of firms that were in trouble. And, you know, you have to, at a certain point. Well,
we were paying attention to the fixed income with all the securitizations.
Right. That's obviously
going wrong. And that was, you know.
Yeah, and you saw it. And I said, Bear. I mean, Bear was in big trouble that day.
Confidence was starting to be lost.
And did you want to be the guy who, I said that there was going to be a run on Washington Mutual. And I got a call from a particular official who said, you know what, that really caused a run in Washington Mutual. I said, no, there is a run in Washington Mutual. You can't say, you can't be the story. Powell doesn't want to be the story. I don't want to be the story. But the fact is that Bill Poole was famous for wanting to tighten right in, and then he made fun of me. We saw not the minutes, but the actual transcripts. And I love Bill Poole because he came in over here and said very nice things. But the fact is that this Fed is a different Fed because of the president, and Bill Poole was dead right in what he said. The president may not be that good. Was it a liquidity ratio? What did he say?
Yeah, I would know a liquidity ratio.
See, but Poole's not worried because he's not anybody that the president's going to come up with a name.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Right. But, you know, Bill was not really listening to what the fixed income markets were saying.
No.
You were glued to the fixed income markets because you taught me, Jim, the equities?
Not the tell back then, certainly. Right. Not at all.
No, I'm not saying we all knew. I think we're all trying to say that, you know what, things were really bad there. It's not like that now.
No.
But our president is itching to have a war with this guy that he picked, and he should have kept yelling. The president should have kept, if he wanted ease, he should have kept yelling. We have to move on.
We do.
I think we should move on to Verizon personally.
I think so, too, because Verizon did report earnings this morning.
Yeah, what was that? How were they
following closely? They weren't bad.
5G? Yeah, 5G stuff?
Well, we talked, it's funny. I talked to Hans Vestberg on Squawk Box, actually. We did an interview this morning, a live one. We also actually did a few more questions and answers, as we say, on tape. Kind of saved a couple of things for our show as well. But as for the quarter, Jim and Carl, as you guys know, a decent quarter for the company. Which has done a lot over the last year that Mr. Vestberg has been in the CEO slot. It is, in fact, a year ago exactly that he took over as the company's CEO. They came in sort of either meeting or above in terms of a lot of the expectations when it comes to net additions for postpaid customers. That is always a key. Service revenue margin, always a key. given wireless, of course, is where this company is at. They're not trying to be a media company, even though they own a couple of media assets. They're not trying to be a cable company, even though they own Fios. They did lose 52,000 video subs. They're a wireless company. It is all about, as Jim said, 5G. Mm-hmm. And interesting, I wasn't here, obviously, for Apple earnings the other day, but I did ask Vestberg as well about demand for handsets, particularly for Apple, but overall. And he noted their equipment revenue was down. Why? Well, perhaps because people are waiting for those 5G handsets, including when Apple's going to have one on the market. Mm-hmm. Take a listen.
You can at least see that in our earnings this quarter that our equipment revenue came down, meaning that right. people are actually waiting a little bit longer to change out the phones. So there are probably some wait and see, and I have not really seen...
What do you think that is? Do you think that's this IEP issue, or do you think it's more about waiting for 5G?
No, I think in general that we have these changes of technology. 4G came, and everybody, I want a 4G phone. And now 4G has been around for 7 years, and now 5G comes, and it's in the beginning, so are the pioneers coming in the beginning. But it's going to come, at least in my belief, that it will come a movement of, hey, now I want my new 5G phones because now I'm enabling it. So, and that's how it worked with 3G, 2G as well, you know. At the end of the cycle, it's less of innovation on that technology. So,
By the way, I was referring when I used those EIP, equipment installment plans, which I've talked about in the past, is perhaps when people stop paying the $30 a month to right. finance their phone, they go, well, wait a second, why am I going to buy a new one? I'll just right. wait. Interesting, though, that there may be this gap. Their equipment revenue did come down as people wait for 5G phones that can do everything they want them to do on a network that actually is working, which, by the way, they're really not there yet.
No.
But they're moving $17, $18 billion in CapEx this year.
Now, they're advertising they're advertising not the Apple phone, right? They're advertising an Android phone.
Well, that's because there's only, I think, three
handsets. They're ready. But I thought what was really interesting, David, is that interview dovetailed exactly with Mollenkopf and Qualcomm, which talked about the Valley. And one of the great comments, I saw a piece of research this morning that said, Qualcomm 2019 recap, fiscal, not complicated, merely awful. David, there is a big gap in this country because of 5G and also because of Huawei. And I thought Verizon, I thought that interview was excellent because they're pretty much having to bridge this. And they're in a tough situation because we don't want 4G, we want 5G. But does that mean we have to switch from Apple? If we want it now?
If you want it now, yeah.
Wow, I don't want to do
but
that.
But do you need it now? First of all, it's not available.
I don't think you need
it now.
In a
lot of markets, Verizon is moving. There's some criticism. We discussed this on the live interview that we did in terms of are they really just focused on urban markets? Is the millimeter wave spectrum
right.
what they need? Do they have a strategy for servicing the rural areas of the country the way T-Mobile and Sprint have spoken so much about in terms of their 5G plans? So it's going to take some time. And then Andrew Sorkin did kind of try to push Mr. Vestberg on, well, when's 50% of the country really going to actually have it available? And he
right.
said, you know, next year.
That's why I think you can wait.
Next year.
But did you notice that Tim Cook dodged anything 5G
yeah.
on that conference call? But this was a great interview because in many ways, Verizon determines what, for 100 million? 900 million people?
Yeah, it's enormous.
So, I mean, they yes. determine a lot of what we end up doing because, in the end, it's the carrier. And with the exception of if you're dealing with suppliers and trying to trace things back, then you've got the Huawei problem with the president.
By the way, while we're on the subject of 5G, just quickly, because it is going to be a performer to the downside, Qualcomm getting hit.
Oh, my. It was
of
so.
The guidance, because, again, this gap. This
the gap.
Sort of, we're going to have
it's a gap
two
here.
Quarters of where we're not really quite there yet in terms of 5G.
No, it's a gap year when your kid didn't do that well and you called it gap year. And it's like, wow. I mean, that stock is going to be uninvestable. It went up very quickly. Did you remember there were people who bought it when it gapped up on the win with Apple?
Well,
and it's just been terrible.
I remember. It was I reported it that day.
I'm sorry, I should say. I forgot to say how great you are. I forgot.
After, obviously, the judge against them on the FTC case, and now this hiccup.
Well, how come you didn't have this before him? Because, boy, this was some story. Oh, you were busy with Verizon.
I was out yesterday. Remember, I was trying to have vacation.
The Verizon interview, I listened to AT&T and Verizon, and they know more than anybody. And sometimes they play their cards very close to the vest. I listened to the Verizon interview. All I could think about was, all right, it's probably not, I'm not going to change the SIM. I'm going to wait. I don't want Android. But everybody who listens to that has to be thinking, do I want 5G now? And I don't know. I watch CNBC on my phone. It's perfect. Right? Does anyone do it? You guys watch on your phone?
That's an issue. It's going to be an issue. Right. But a lot more to come from David's interview with Vestberg later on this morning. When we come back, Beyond Meat's out with details about the secondary, putting further pressure on the stock. There it is, 169. Also ahead, Fed Reserve Board nominee Judy Shelton, a day after the Fed rate cut and the Powell sell-off. We got to get to Cigna, GM, Dunkin', Yum, Clorox, a double upgrade of RH. We're back in a moment. All right, so we put July to bed. Take a look at the leaders for last month. Twitter, number one on the S&P, followed by Micron and Universal Health. As we start August, we'll see what the new gainers will be. Actually, July never went negative on the S&P, not for
Isn't
a single second.
Even, you know, but Twitter's very interesting. And Micron, those are two that many people bet against, and they turn out to be bad bets.
Cramer's Mad Dash coming up after a break.
Started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange a little less than 9 minutes. I'm happy to be back to be able to do a mad dash with you before you dash away for a long weekend, perhaps. What do we got today?
Okay, interestingly enough, David, years ago, my executive producer, Regina Gilgan, procured a crow for me to eat for something I got wrong. I put some Gouldens on it. Not bad. This morning, Bank of America Merrill Lynch goes from a sell to a buy. RH, Restoration Hardware. Crow, please. Check, please. And what's going on here is it why? Because it turns out that Gary Friedman, the CEO, basically just made a better product than people thought. It's the galleries, which are so exciting. You've got to take your wife to the gallery downtown in the Meat District.
One that's got the restaurant.
Yeah,
at the top.
It is an Instagram palace. I went there with my daughter. We posted and posted and posted and posted. It was David. The place to post. Not dumb as a post, but a post. And this macro holding up better. He's been able to mitigate China, which is about 40%. He's got that down. Gary is a genius. And the stuff is good. And what the guy basically missed was that the stuff's really good. I mean, we did our bathroom with the stuff. We use it. There's an RH box every morning.
What about their sourcing and their supply chain?
Well, he's been able to mitigate some China. I don't know, between Net-a-Porter and RH, which do you have more box? Oh, you don't shop and your wife doesn't shop, but that's what you get.
She does, I don't.
We Shopify around the clock. Good quarter Shopify, should be up 20. And I just think that the new stores are great, and he misjudged a very hard thing to do. Like, he was thinking it was a photograph. David,
wait,
it was a Cezanne.
He being this analyst.
The analyst, yeah. He was a photo critic, okay? It was Matisse. Gary Friedman is an artist. He missed it. He probably thought a Rothko's worth about $10. Wrong. So this stock is going to go to all-time highs.
All right. There it is.
Get to the Meat District, David. There's like a 6-hotel room place to.
No, I've been there. I've been to that store. I've been to the restaurant.
Why?
Yeah. I went out one night.
Someone dragoons you?
Yeah.
Okay. You ever go to Boudicca?
I've been there.
Wow.
I go out to eat.
You get out. Take a nap after you.
I don't go out to shop.
A little nap.
I do need a nap. Flight home.
Not me.
Apparently bad weather here yesterday.
Remember, I didn't sleep on Tuesdays for 4 years.
You weren't letting us fly in here.
I know. Nobody. My daughter was 6 hours late.
All right. We got an opening bell. No more travel plans to discuss with you. Stay with us on Squawk on the Street. A lot more stocks and news to get to.
You're watching CNBC Squawk on the Street, live from the financial capital of the world. Opening bell in just about 3.5 minutes. Very busy Thursday, obviously, in the wake of Powell's presser. You got Beyond Meat under some pressure in the pre-market. Company prices the secondary of 3.25 million shares at 160. That's a nearly 19% discount to yesterday's close. The offering's expected to close on or about August 5th. And then you got the impossible going nationwide at Burger King.
Yep, Impossible is GMO, remember? I think Impossible is great tasting, but it is, the millennials don't like GMO. I would point out, I think this is a brilliant pricing. I think Ethan Brown, actually the CEO, orchestrated the pricing, and I think that if you had to get a mind meld, what would happen is he doesn't want to look greedy. Everybody who bought it makes money. Everybody who sold it makes money. I don't think there's a single flipper who bought it. It's all mutual funds that are going to hold it. And this is a win-win for everyone. Is it a short squeeze? It's obviously a short squeeze. Did he do what Fitbit and you know, GoPro did? Remember, those were the other two where they broke the lockup. That's what everyone's saying to me, that the Fitbit broke the lockup, and look where Fitbit is, and GoPro broke the lockup, meaning that they were able to sell before you thought they could sell. So there's a lot of people sitting around saying, is Beyond Meat the next Fitbit or the next GoPro? Remember, I knew the GoPro was at the top when I was in Hawaii, and there was a goat that was wearing a GoPro on a surfboard. That's top. It was at 96. I said, I smell a top when you put the goat on the surfboard with the GoPro.
I remember that day as well. So you don't believe there's a top here?
No, I think it can go down. They break the short squeeze a little, but yeah. You know, this is not a $12 billion company, but it should not be a $2 billion company. A lot of people think it should. I think they priced the offering. There's an ethos thing going on here. Anyone in the restaurant business is now confronted with this. Do you have any meatless tacos that taste like meat? No, we don't have that.
That's interesting.
We have meat tacos that taste like meat.
That comes on a day where we got Dunkin'. Dunkin' comps up 1.7. Yum.
Oh, man. Yum on fire.
Taco Bell up 7. Yep. Overall comps up 5. Pretty good restaurant.
Everyone wanted to be in Yum China. By the way, Yum China's been good, too. But it turns out that Yum International, Creed has done such a good job. International, all those ones that were doggy are doing great now.
Last Friday, Starbucks and McDonald's, which were also extraordinarily strong.
They have scale. They have scale. They can deliver.
It's like people like to go to out and get their coffee
their
fast food.
They like Nitro. Millennials love Nitro. Have you ever had Nitro?
No.
I don't sleep for, it's like, for me, it's like Sterno. I don't sleep for 3 days. I think I went blind when I had Nitro.
The typical not sleeping for 2 days and then.
I didn't sleep on Tuesdays. That was my rule. No sleep on Tuesdays.
Right.
Who the heck missed it?
Let's get the opening bell here in the S&P 500 at the CNBC Real Time Exchange. And the big board celebrating an IPO today. It's Dynatrace, provider of a software intelligence platform for the enterprise cloud. We'll talk to the CEO later on this morning after the stock opens. At the NASDAQ, celebrating an IPO, Sundial Growers, a Canadian cannabis
boy.
We'll talk to them as well.
You've got to ask them about the scandal, this CanTrust scandal. It's really driven down a lot of the cannabis companies because they did some things that were unauthorized and Canada didn't like it. It caused the group to come down, CanTrust.
Also this week, Cuomo, governor of New York, signed a decriminalization of cannabis.
Yes.
It's now a fine, essentially.
I know, a parking ticket. Yep. Really something. The dispensaries are still not ramped up in a state like Massachusetts or Washington. In California, they've got it going. In Oregon, pricing, there's so many of them. Pricing has collapsed in Oregon, where my daughter's from. That's how I know.
Pricing at Hawaii, what's happening?
There's too many,
Black market is stubborn.
Yes, yeah. And you know, if you want to know the truth, they ripped up all the Pinot Noir fields. It wasn't that great Pinot Noir, David. You won't miss it. And they put pot
what are
fields.
What are you talking about? Willamette?
No, that's the good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Southern Oregon. Okay. Southern Oregon used to smell like wine. Now you get high driving on Interstate 5.
Got it. All right.
Speaking of driving, Jim, GM has to be one of the nice surprises of the morning.
Yes.
Right? Strength in North America, crossovers, SUVs. Phil LeBeau just talked to the CFO a moment ago.
Phil did so great. I loved what he said, which is, hey, this hasn't been in this territory for a long time, 44-1. What's really amazing about this is that GM China's collapsed, and they were still able to do this with North America. It's very impressive. This management team is now starting to really deliver what normally would have sunk that company, which is a decline in the second biggest market, by the way, their biggest market last year. And they've managed to pull it off with U.S.
We may do under 17 for the first time, 17 million total for the first time since 2014.
I know. Right? That's something that Jay Powell can use.
Yes.
I would have used auto. I mean, because DuPont this morning reported a quarter and auto was terrible. 3M auto was terrible. It's Illinois Tool Works auto was terrible. Lear auto was terrible. Auto's terrible, except for GM, the auto company. Because they're lean, they're mean, they're a fighting machine.
Did you come up with that?
Yeah, myself, I came up with
that. Very good.
I got that at Faber College.
Knowledge is good, my friend. Knowledge is good.
Jim, we've talked about consumer products companies doing well all week.
Oh.
Then along comes Clorox and guides 2020 revenue flat to 2.
Oh, it's the household products, Carl. It's just the household products. I can't even bear to look at it. You know, this is bags, kitty litter, maybe the, you know, the wet season for charcoal, Kingsford's. Benador, he's got some trouble here, Benador. And he can't make it up with filtration or with Clorox, which was mentioned prominently in the debate.
Yes, it was.
And that didn't help Clorox, but of course that's next quarter.
The senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, saying the first thing she would do in the Oval Office is it was an ad. It was Clorox.
That's very good, but it's not
doing.
It was
one of the most tweeted lines of the night.
But it's like, not driving sales because what she really
expected. I didn't expect it
right.
That.
Because there's no policy involved.
But Clorox is very effective. One of the things I know from Ben, Clorox kills everything. Well, there isn't anything that can survive Clorox.
Right here. Kill whatever's been left over.
Yeah. It's not killing their quarter. What's killing their quarter is household products. And I don't know what to say because this thing was on a roll. It was one of the absolute best of that whole sleepy group going up and up. And now it's Procter.
I wasn't here. That's what I was just going to ask. I wasn't here when Procter reported.
You're talking about 7% organic growth.
No,
we had to do not one but two interviews with Procter. That's how great it was. We had the CFO and the CEO. That's how great Procter was.
It was a double whammy, huh?
Yes, it was like a double upgrade, like Restoration Hardware. Pass me the
that?
Pro.
Not only the double upgrade out of BAML, but their target goes to 85 to 165.
Yeah, he was kind of on the wrong side of the trade there for a while.
Yeah.
Kind of a pactor of Netflix, you know? Pactor. He's a nice guy.
Mentioning, as you said earlier, Jim, price hikes, this gallery conversion, which they did not believe in
prior. Well, he didn't believe it. No, look, you have to go with someone who's a customer. Like my work club members of RH. And my wife is like, you know how there's like that that trash ad where he points to it and it disappears? I'm not going to make doom. Like my wife was like, doom, 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 doom.
Meaning I'll take that and that.
Yeah. And it was like we were in there to interview Gary Friedman. I said, go home. You're costing me. He said, no, I wanted to go to the gallery. The gallery. It is. Wow. It's not like going to like the gallery of signatures. You know,
does anybody go there?
It's so crowded, you mean?
No.
Yeah, no. Right. Nobody goes there. Nobody goes there. Yeah. Apple's back, by the way.
Apple's not only back, Jim. FT has a piece out today about who has the number one cash hoard. Obviously, it's been Apple for a long time. Alphabet has replaced it at $117 billion, as Apple's has come down from 160 to 102 now.
Yeah, well, they actually want to spend every penny. Yeah. Ruth Porat, her goal is not to spend, to buy back every single share. Ruth Porat delivered a great quarter. I think they have to keep pouring money toward the cloud. I think that when you talk to these companies that are saying cloud spending could return, when we had Lisa Su from Queens on yesterday, missed her.
I saw your tweets about Lisa Su, yeah.
Data center going to come back. And look, I think Alphabet had a great quarter, but that was so long ago. I mean, it was like a lifetime ago. That's so hard. Plus, it was also at the end of the week in the summer. People weren't focused on Thursday night, like Starbucks, we had KJ on. But I did think that they had a great quarter. They have a lot of cash, and they've been uniquely burning it in other bets as opposed to buying back stock like Apple.
We're taking another look at Verizon. Had been up as much as 2% earlier. Was generally a very positive quarter for the company in terms of at least beating a number of the analyst estimates for postpaid net additions in terms of its wireless franchise. I did talk to Hans Vestberg on Squawk Box about coming competition, of course, in the wireless business, given the expected merger of Sprint and T-Mobile, not to mention the entrance of Dish Wireless to create what the Justice Department hopes will be a true fourth competitor in terms of 5G. But guys, coming back to Sprint T-Mobile for a moment, the states, remember, we're supposed to go to trial October 7th, 13 states in the District of Columbia that are still opposing the deal. Really, we've never been in territory like this where the DOJ says yes, with obviously all the things included in that consent decree. And the states are still saying, no, we want to go to court to try and stop it. Something that may be somewhat helpful were comments from John Ledger at the very end of the conference call. I don't know if you caught this. I think we have it on a full screen for everybody. He was asked sort of about the profitability of the MVNO deal, you know, the capacity agreement that they would agree to with Dish. Here's what he said. He's got a transaction where Boost, that's what they're divesting, the prepaid business becomes an MVNO stream to us. In other words, Boost using T-Mobile's capacity, which certainly has positive financial implications for us. Then he went on to say that as well, you have a transaction on spectrum that's going to either be at the value or if it doesn't take place, meaning when they buy the spectrum for 3.6 billion dish, we'll have an option later on to sell that at that price or to keep it. And then you got Dish Spectrum and the MVNO that are all in of themselves positive to the financials of the company.
Okay.
Why is this important? I think there's been a perception after the deal that it was going to be neutral, that, you know, that Dish would be using this network sort of at cost.
Right.
And that would help make them more competitive.
That's what I thought.
Him coming out and saying, oh, we're going to make money on it.
No, you're not supposed to.
Might be helpful to the state's case a little bit. We'll watch. We'll see.
That's funny because Bud would not. I mean, when they did divest with Del and Corona, it was obviously a negative. I mean, it went, look, David, that's stunning.
I think he went off script. John can do
sometimes. Well, he can do that, but that's you know, look at what's happening with Bristol-Myers and Celgene.
Be very careful.
When they made Bristol-Myers divest Tesla.
Lawyers,
you know, they made him divest Tesla, which I thought was one of the greatest drugs. That hurt Bristol badly. You're supposed to be hurt by this, for heaven's sake.
Yep.
David, how did you feel when you asked him about Dumb and Dumber? Weren't you? He's a distinguished man. You had to go there.
Vesberg, yeah.
You went and... That was a great part. I wish we had the clip, but I didn't speak to this.
Yes,
I didn't speak to your producer beforehand.
Vestberg's very...
See, he wanted to... This is like Jay Powell and the president. Vestberg would not go there when David said, what do you think about being called Dumb and Dumber?
No, clueless.
Clueless. Yeah. He didn't go there because he's a distinguished guy. And I think he's Swedish.
Yes, he is.
He's Swedish.
He's that, too.
They're neutral.
Sometimes,
they've always been neutral, right? Kind of like Switzerland of the Scandinavian area.
Yes.
Jim, really quick on some macro. Dollar index 2-year highs today.
It's killing us.
We're going to get ISM in about 20 minutes. And the jobs number tomorrow. I mean, what's the likelihood that we spend the weekend asking if the Fed made a policy mistake?
Well, I think that the weekend could come. And then on Monday, President Trump says, I spoke to Mnuchin, and I think we ought to raise the tariffs. So therefore, it wouldn't be a mistake. But you're absolutely right. There is some momentum. The claims were... strong again.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, this dollar, you got to go over the Apple conference call because, you know, when you have 300 people don't know what basis points are. I mean, I wonder if Bill Poole thinks that the president knows about basis points. 300 basis points on currency in 1 year. How do you manage that?
That's one reason for Clorox.
Yeah. And Clorox doesn't even have that much international versus the others, and they're hurt. That's why Procter was so amazing that they were able to manage this. In an environment, Procter once did a tutorial about 2 years ago about what it really means to have a strong dollar. It was brilliant because there's some advantage of it, but overall, you're getting crushed by a strong dollar. It's like all these other countries are Confederate dollars and we're Union dollars. You know?
Mm-hmm. I get it.
You get that?
I do. I mean, you didn't know. Yeah, I'm an expert on the Confederacy's currency.
Are you?
Yeah. No.
Okay, then
not.
Who was the Treasury Secretary?
Kidding.
Was
it Larry Sumner's?
No,
Sumner? Get it?
It was Judah Benjamin. Judah Benjamin.
Who was the Treasury Secretary for the Confederacy?
I think it was Judah Benjamin, wasn't it?
Judah Benjamin.
Are you on Jeopardy? I don't know why this is a problem.
Judah Benjamin escapes.
He was the Treasury Secretary.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah,
I remember
good.
That.
He was good. He was able to. He kept that Confederate dollar as strong as he could. Like, not unlike. The Japanese and the Europeans with these currencies that they just...
Did Jefferson Davis tweet about him, too?
Jefferson Davis, you should read about the last 10 days of Jefferson Davis, about how he ran away. It's pretty amazing. He was no General Lee. They were the wrong side of the history, just so you know. Let's get that straight. Jesus.
Thanks for clearing that up.
No problem. Sun power up strong. I just want to point that out quickly.
Guys, we're back to 29.85. Let's get to Bob Pisani this morning. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, Carl. Happy Thursday, everybody. It's a rough start to the month, and its history is not on our side, unfortunately, for the month of August. Let's just run through what we've got here in terms of the situation. August is the worst month for the Dow and the S&P going back to 1987. If you use those numbers, this is the Stock Traders Almanac. If you go back even further, it's the second worst month. Let's not quibble. August and September, not a good setup historically. Stocks are pricey. Remember, we're up almost 20% this year, and earnings are essentially flat. So we're pushing 18 multiple right now. That's historically pricey. Yes, low interest rates help, but it's a tough setup as well. We don't have a lot of clarity on global growth. We don't have a lot of clarity on tariffs. And, of course, the future rate cut the Fed has made it a little cloudier for us. Another additional X factor here. So this is what I call a tough setup overall. But there's a lot of positives out there. There's plenty of bulls. There's no shortage out there. The U.S. economic data is strong. We'll see what happens with the ISM this morning. We got lower rates. And generally, central banks are not the enemy of the markets. No matter what the cloudiness of the Fed yesterday, they are still very accommodative. There's also a lot of rotation going on. I keep hearing this from traders. Baba moving in and out of different stocks here, and I'm not doing bad so far this year. So several people have pointed out to me, we've had some disasters. Boeing has been a disaster for the Dow. It's 24% off its 52-week high. 3M's 21%. These are high-priced stocks. Caterpillar, 17%. United Health Group, 14%. You put all these four stocks together, they're almost 1,500 points on the downside for the Dow because of their declines. But other stocks have been doing very, very well. This is this rotation that keeps going on here. So Home Depot, Microsoft, McDonald's, Disney, Coke, they're all 2, 3%. And most of them were only 1% as of yesterday off of their historic highs. So there's been a lot of rotations into various stocks. Generally, big global industrials, not so good. Consumer names and a few select big international tech names have been doing much, much better overall. And that's why the market keeps holding up. The Dow, you would think, would be a disaster with Boeing, and yet it's just fractions off a 52-week high. That's what I'm talking about, that strong rotation that's going on. Today, if you look at what's going on, here's this odd thing that's been going on for months now. Semiconductors up and consumer staples up. This is an odd pairing, but it's been one of the themes throughout the year. Slightly more defensive names combined with high growth cyclical names. That's an odd pairing. Transport's a little bit weaker. Robinson, FedEx down a little bit. Here's your weakness today. And there's a couple of reasons for oil stocks being down. In particular, oil exploration and production companies. We've got oil down today, a little over 2%. But we had some poor guidance. Concho, one of the big exploration production companies, they talked about lower production. This is particularly, of course, here in the United States. Apache had their numbers out as well. They're down, as you can see here. So all of the big exploration and production companies are trading to the downside. This is not a new story. We all know the XOP, which used to be extremely actively traded ETF, is sitting essentially right near 52-week low. This is the basket of all of the exploration and production stocks. And in general, energy is now essentially 4% of the S&P 500. A lot of the big hedge funds that were in energy are essentially out of that trade right now. So, yes, it's unfortunate, but when you compare to the strength of energy 20, 30, and certainly 40 years ago, when it was 10, 15% of the S&P 500, they're not as important in terms of the impact that they used to have. It's sad, but it's true. Carl, back to you.
Much. As we said, we're awaiting ISM in about 15 minutes. Let's get to Rick Santelli in Chicago. Morning, Rick.
Good morning, Carl. Well, the quarter point decrease in the Fed funds rate from 2.25 to 2.5 now remains at 2 to 2.25. It might seem like a small amount, but it is 1/9 of our total quiver with regard to the amount of eases we have left, which is now 8. And it's had a very strange effect on the marketplace. Look at a 3-day of 2-year note yields. Of course, most of their activity yesterday was to the upside, but all of a sudden, it is starting to break down. And if you look at a 3-day of 10s, it really jumps out at you. We are now below all of the trading yesterday. We just broke under 2%. And if you recall, the low for this move on a closing basis was July 3rd, 195 yield close. So we are within a handful of basis points of challenging that. But the big beneficiary, also very counterintuitive to a central bank that is easing, is the significant pop in the dollar index. And not only does it have a pop, as you see on this 3-day chart, it has been popping for a while. Right now, look at the next chart. If we were to close here, it'd be the best close since the spring of 2017. And of course, maybe the more appropriate story that I will discuss with Dr. Judy Shelton at 10:30 Eastern is how the euro currency now is at the weakest levels since 2017 against the greenback. How much of what the Fed did is to get ahead of other central banks and their impact on things like foreign exchange? Very important questions. And much of the motivation in the marketplace seems to be just that, that many investors believe that there is now a bit of a race between central banks that might really neuter much of the effects the Fed was hoping for regarding this quarter point cut. Carl, David, Jim, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see in a few minutes. We did get yesterday the first trailer for The Irishman, the much-talked-about movie from Scorsese for Netflix. It stars De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, reportedly a budget of hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a big bet for Netflix. It will be the most expensive adult drama in recent history, as they're spending over $500 million on three pictures.
I know. That's my street, by the way. They made the movie on my street, Brooklyn. And the expense, the burial expense, holy cow, this is a lot. This is a very big bet by Reed. I know a lot of people feel the stock is bottom technically, but I do think you have to look at that budget on these movies versus what Disney does.
The numbers are stunning.
Yeah.
I continue to wonder about the relationship with incredible talent like this, or perhaps more of the people who are developing series for them as opposed to major motion pictures, and how strong that will remain given the lack of detail that the content providers are given about the success or failure of their shows, which then obviously colors their negotiation to get renewed.
Do you think that it's finally seen its the heyday? It's kind of
Netflix overall.
Yeah.
Do I?
Yeah. The only reason I ask is because that last quarter was bad. Okay, let's just call it bad. But I remain convinced that this is a company that has just not been that great at forecasting, and that there's a love for Netflix that could be worldwide. And I'm a believer, and I'm just trying to figure out the level. But that figure you just gave about the amount they spent on movies. That's too much. I mean, you have to have a lot of people sign up because of The Irishman.
You do, but what if this is the best movie that's made this year? That probably
well,
that's a, brand,
well, yeah, but do you
right?
want to make a bet? Well, he's a bet the house guy.
If you're going to make a bet, that's probably the one to make.
So I would.
Stacey with those guys.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a big fan.
I would take it, yeah.
Have you ever seen Mean Streets?
I mean, people are happy to have a new Tarantino and Scorsese picture in the same year.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
we've been starved for adult drama
in
this country.
I think that Irishman is so... Look, we just put it on. Why? Because it's an event. I sat there spellbound. I just watched in the street. I said, my wife, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching this movie be made. They had all these cars. I mean, they blocked off the street for days. And I just was hoping to see one of those stars. I never saw a single star. They're always in the trailer. You can't get in the trailer. Not a lot in the trailer.
They do the same scenes over and over and over and over and
True.
Over and over again. When you watch them making a movie.
Yeah, well, they do it this way.
It's got to be mind-numbing for those actors.
Horrible to be an actor.
Indeed.
Horrible.
Shoot it 700 different ways.
I know. How'd you know that?
Because I've watched two.
Okay.
When we come back, Burger King upping the ante by launching the Impossible Burger nationwide. Starts next week. We're going to talk with the Burger King's chief, the parent, Restaurant Brands, in the next hour as the Dow is up a quick 77. We did some of the best names for July on the S&P. Here's some of the Dow losers. Pfizer, J&J, Boeing, which Pisani just called a disaster.
J&J is lawsuits. I'm not even going to dignify it. Just say lawsuits. Okay.
Well, again, as August kicks off, Dow's up 87. Back in a moment. Jim, what's on Matt tonight?
Okay, hat trick. We have Hologic, great healthcare company. We have SeatGeek, which is a kind of like a StubHub. And then my favorite, American Tower. It's unbelievable. Jim Tickler has done great. David, you know the tower stocks win no matter who combines, no matter what. There's cell towers everywhere, and American Tower dominates. AMT, which is like an ATM, frankly, for shareholders.
Jim, we'll see it tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m.
What a show we just had.
When we come back, Fed nominee Judy Shelton and ISM in 3 minutes. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.